Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 23, delivered on December 2, 2015. The title of this lecture is Review for Final Exam.
Today, review for the final exam. The final exam is constructed as the exam 1 and exam 2 were. You will have essay questions, and you will be able to choose, in this case, out of 7, choose 5. I had said 6 before, but it'll be 5. There'll be broad questions. Now, the first thing that I would encourage you, before I go into any more specifics, step 1 is take those 20 questions that I talked about for exam 1, those 20 questions for exam 2, and half of the questions will be those questions for the final. Those questions, I will repeat them because, and how would you know which ones are more important to look at? That comes in the second thing that I want to mention to you. The syllabus, whether you read it or not, had a key in it. It talked about the course competencies. That's a fancy way of saying, what are my objectives for you to accomplish in this course? And you go right to the throat of it. Market, financial market structure. Now, so in other words, there could be, and again, I'm just giving you some extras, some more questions that could be along with those 40 that I've already given you. I could ask you about what is the difference between a stock market and a bond market? Or explain what is meant by a market portfolio? Or what's the difference between the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ? What is the difference between the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ? Let me ask you this. Can you tell me the difference between the New York Stock, a fundamental difference between the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ? Yeah.
Isn't the New York Stock Exchange a physical place?
Bingo. Purely electronic. And that's exactly. The New York Stock Exchange is a physical platform for dealers and brokers to trade stocks on behalf of clients or sometimes on behalf of themselves. But the NASDAQ is just purely an online network of market makers that handle stocks, that take buy and sell orders. They might make the market in some of those. Otherwise, they have to find a market maker. Okay, market structure. That's the kind of thing that I might be looking for in a question like that. Going on with the first set of competencies, risk and expected return of a security. A classic question, of course, and you've already been told this, what is the relationship between risk and return? Now, remember that there's actually kind of a bluff in there. There's something that's hidden in there, and you answer it the wrong way, and you could lose some serious points. And keep this in mind. I'm grading you harder on this exam than I would on the first one because you are so much more mature now than when we started this course. The difference between risk and return. Can you tell me? Right off the top of your head, go.
Are the risks higher
than you expected? There you go. But it's not just the risk. You almost got it, but you lost about a third of the points with your answer there. You got one part of it that might have. I said, what is the difference between, what is the relationship between risk and return?
Systematic risk.
Good. Good. There are two kinds of risk. There is unsystematic risk. We can get rid of that. No one cries for you if you get your butt kicked and you had tons of unsystematic risk. You don't have to have it. And that means that when we look at stock charts up and down, I showed you these stock charts early in the semester. I said, look at all the volatility. Because at that point, I hadn't told you that a lot of that volatility is irrelevant to us. And that was what I was testing you on in that second exam, was show me that you understand that just price volatility, what we see with our eyes, is not enough. And that's why you know more now than the average person, because you look at that and you say, that's actually partly an illusion that is given by the unsystematic risk. So it's the greater the systematic risk, the greater the non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. Don't forget those two parts. It's not just risk, and it is certainly not return, because there's no guarantee for the future. Cost of capital. How do we find the cost of capital? There are these different costs, and I could ask you a question. What are the component costs of capital? What are the component costs of capital? And you remember that drills down. There are these different things that a company can use for capital. It can use for capital. Can you tell me one thing, madam? You're wearing a hat that deserves to have me ask, can you tell me one source of capital? Just any source of capital. Selling stock, okay? Okay, but that's not enough. You can sell different kinds of stock. What stock? Now, you've done enough. So now I can go on. Woman, what would you say? There are different kinds of stock. I could sell what kind of stock to raise money? Or I could sell, bingo, those are two separate costs of capital to the company. There's a cost of preferred stock, there's a cost of common stock. Those constitute different costs of capital. But there are other ways that a company could, now those both fall under one generic term. What kind of capital is that? What? Huh?
Internal?
No. Oh, God, no. Yeah, that's right, Moose. But what else? It's called
equity.
Oh, there you go.
There it is.
Yeah,
there
give
it
him
is.
A cookie. Yeah, equity. You were just referring to two kinds of equity. There is a third kind of equity, which you had brought up, internally generated equity. So equity is a complex of things. Equity is internally generated, which is money that has survived to the bottom line. You've paid your bills, and now at the bottom line, you have money that you can give to the shareholders, or you can reinvest it in the company. So their equity is, like I said, a complex structure. There's this internally generated equity. The cost of having your shareholders, the cost of bearing them and all of their needs on you. Then there's the cost of bringing in new shareholders, which are as bad as the old shareholders that you already have, plus you have to lose some money to get them. You lose money in the inbound leg because brokers will take money away from you to sell your stock to them. And then there's another source of capital. There's another source of capital, which is actually also very complex too. What's the other source of capital? Now, we talked about internally and externally generated equity. But there's another source of capital, by far the larger source of capital,
debt.
Debt. And debt, of course, is, as I told you, debt is the debt markets are 10 times the size of the equity markets. But they are quiet markets. They aren't as up and down. They aren't as volatile. You won't see blazing headlines, the debt market dropped today. But you'll see, the Dow Jones took an ass bath today. No, you'll see the Dow Jones fall. No one will ever talk to you about bond markets really took a beating today as a headline. They don't have that sexiness. They don't have that allure, even though they are the much larger market. They're quieter. The volatility isn't as strong as it is with stocks. And why would the volatility not be as strong with bonds? Could you tell me that? I could put a question. Compare the volatility of equity markets with the volatility of debt markets. Could you tell me which one? Oh, well, and I just told you. Well, equity markets and why. Equity markets are much more volatile than debt markets, and the debt markets are less volatile because, can you tell me why the debt markets have less whipsaw up and down? There's a lot, well, not really, because equity is forever. I kind of understand your, I kind of think I know what you're thinking about, but knock that off. It has to do with the fact that the debt markets have the prior claim on the assets. It all boils down to the fact they're going to get their money first. So, if, okay, you just found out that you are the illegitimate child of Bill Gates. He just found out, too. Shocked the hell out of him. So he put a trust fund together for you just to shut you up because he doesn't want to deal with someone like you. So you got this money that's going to come in. You, madam, have to work every day. You got that job at the Chick-fil-A, and you've risen to assistant manager, and everyone loves you because there's an extra pickle on every sandwich you sell. I know, right? Drool. And so, in other words, from month to month, you're going to suffer more. He sits back, ha, 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 I've got money coming in. You don't know. Things, times could change. People could suddenly realize they don't like Chick-fil-A anymore. Or you could have some hot shot like this lady come in, and she delivers two extra pickles so people like her more. And the spicy chicken sandwich, we're talking spicy the way she makes it. So you lose your job. You, it doesn't matter how many pickles you put on a sandwich, you're going to get your money. Prior claim makes it less risky for those kinds of investors. They don't panic every time something goes wrong. Bond markets, at the end of the day, as bad as things can get, you can sit back and know, well, if the company fails, I'm just going to take everything the company had. I'm going to liquidate it. Stock markets, when things go bad, their whole investment is at stake in there. They lose everything. So that's why it's a quieter market. And I want you to capture that in good, solid language. Be short. Be to the point. Don't go off on a tangent. Just say that. Capital structure. Make sure you know, and this is repeating something that you've already been told before. Know what I mean by capital structure. Know what is meant by optimal capital structure. Know why companies care about their capital structure. There's one reason why a company cares about its capital structure and why it pursues the optimal capital structure. There's just one reason for that. One reason only for that. Okay, now, moving on. Also, I want you to go back to the fundamentals. Make sure you know the difference between short-term and long-term fund markets. A short-term market for funds is called what? Do you know that? Madam, do you know that? You don't. Do you have anything? Oh, are you carrying a wallet today or a purse? Yeah, you're not. You got any? You got a wallet. Look in there. What do you got in there?
Dollar bills.
Okay, I was going to say, what's that ring shape? No. what is that thing?
The $10 bill.
That's money. The money market is a short market. As opposed to what's a long market for funds? Do you know that one? Huh? No, no, no. It's a capital market. Capital markets are the long funds. capital project. When we say capital, we are generally referring to long instruments or to long things, things that last a long time. Like a capital project is something that's going to last for more than a year. So a money market is a market for funds that are less than a year. A capital market is a market for funds that are, have a duration of more than a year. Make sure you understand the money market and the capital market. There are some debt instruments in the money market. A company could borrow money from the money market. There are a couple of ways that a company could borrow money from a money market. Do you know the names of those instruments in the short market? No. One is a bill. Every time you get a bill, every time a company gets a bill, that's a short-term obligation. A bill is a short-term obligation. Now, some companies go out there and they borrow money. If it's a large credit-worthy company, it'll go out and borrow very short money, 30-day money, in the money market. What is the name of that instrument that they use for borrowing money on a very short-term basis in the money market? Large sums, too, but they don't need it for more than 30 days. Do you remember the name of it? What was it? I thought I heard it, or was that a fart? No, it's commercial paper. Remember I told you about Enron dumped all that commercial paper out of the market? Safe, super safe market. Enron was pushing out commercial paper, and then it went belly up, and all those investors who thought they had been putting money into something very safe got their clocks cleaned. They didn't get their money back in 30 days. They never got their money back because commercial paper is unsecured. So they were at the bottom of the totem pole on the debt holders. Prior claim, sure, but they were the lowest of the low on the prior claim. Now let's talk about debt markets. As far as, I want you to make sure that you know priority of claim. Obviously, debt has claim that is prior to shareholders' claim. Shareholders have the residual claim after all debts have been satisfied in a timely manner. That doesn't mean, don't say on the exam, after all debts are paid off, the shareholders get theirs. No, no, no. It's as long as the debts are being paid in a timely manner, then the shareholders do have the residual claim. But as far as the priority within the debts go, what would be the highest priority claim among debt instruments? What would be the name of that instrument? Do you remember? A bond that would have the very highest. It would get paid first if things went all to hell. You remember what it was? It's an asset-backed bond, a mortgage bond. They would get everything would be liquidated, and then they'd collect their money off the liquidation, and then lower levels of debt would be paid off after them. What is an unsecured debt called? Do you remember the name for it? Make sure you know it. What's an unsecured debt called? Starts with a D. You don't know? Let me see if I can jog your memory on this. Let me see. Sir. Okay. You know those snack cakes that were made by Hostess, little Hostess snack cakes. Well, there was another company that was also had a kind. You could get a Hostess snack cake, or you could get the other one, which was called a...
I don't know what that was called.
No.
Little Debbie.
Yeah, Little Debbie. Okay, so what was her name? Not Lil, what was her name?
Debbie.
Debbie, okay. But when she grew up, she wasn't Debbie, she was...
Deborah?
No, Deb, fool.
I know a Deborah.
Deb, I know. That's that one that works at the Denny's, right?
Yeah, sure.
She's a little old for you. I don't know, what, like 62?
My thug.
I know. Got that Social Security check every month coming in a couple of years. Look, Deb. So what's it called? A Deb. If it's an unsecured debt, it's a Deb. Thank you, debenture.
That's what I just said.
No, you were talking about that lady at the Denny's who gives you the grand slam for half off. God. Ow, that hurt like hell. What the hell is this anyway? Is that what it is? No, there's no candle bottom. It's like a Kardashian. Okay. Okay. I will expect you to be able to tell me various ways that a company can raise money. If a company wants to raise money but it does not need to have the stock be freely tradable, what kind of an exemption from registration could it use? A company wants to raise money by selling stock, but it does not need to have the stock freely tradable. What exemptions could the company use under Securities Act of 1933? Do you know? You don't know. Okay. Let's see if I can jog your memory. Okay. Will someone shut him up? Woman? Okay. You ever heard of a musician named Bob Marley? What kind of music was he known for?
Like reggae music.
Reggae. That's right. They could invoke a Regulation A reggae exemption for registration. Now, no one has ever thought of making Reg B or Reg C music, but there were a few after him who tried to do Reg
D.
Reg D, 504, 505, and 506. You're looking like, what? Look, the Regulation D, Reg D, there's the 504, the 505, and the 506. There are ways that you can sell stock without doing the registration with the SEC under the Securities Act of 1933 and all of that. However, the stock is not freely tradable except for which one of the Reg D's? One of those Reg D's creates freely tradable stock. You remember it? It's called the $1 million offering. This is way back in your learning. It was the Reg D 504. It was $1 million you could raise, and you did have to go through all of the registration statements and all of that. But you still had to do an offering circular. But it was a way to raise. But a Reg D 505 and a Reg D 506, you would invoke that regulation if you were selling to qualified rich investors who had the brains to know what they were doing. You couldn't just sell to anyone like you could with a Reg D 504 or with a normal fully registered offering. So 505 and a 506 were for the kinds of, you could sell stock to them, not register it with the Securities and Exchange Commission. It would be what's called a private placement with qualified, sophisticated investors based upon what rules you, which one you were pulling, and all of that. And then there's the Reg A, which was another one of those exemptions you could get by with. Okay, now if you're going to go fully blown and do a full registration statement, first things first, what is the selling document for a registration statement called? Do you remember? What is it? No. What is the selling document? It's called a prospectus. Remember, the prospectus is the selling document. There's an original version that you're not allowed to use for selling, but you can show it around. It has red lettering on it. Do you remember what that one's called? What do penguins eat? Do they eat salmon? No, salmon are too big. They eat a smaller fish. You know what it is called? It's a herring. So if you paint that red, what have you got? A red herring. God, you guys are smarter than you think you are, right? Okay, yeah, the red herring. Now, do you remember that thing that you see in Wall Street Journal? It looks like an advertisement. It looks like a selling document, but it is specifically not. It even says on it, this is not a selling document, for God's sake. It's like a notice. Do you remember what that thing is called? There was this story about in the Old West, this big dog bursts into this saloon, and he looks around, and he's limping. And you know what he says to everyone in the bar, in the saloon? "I'm looking for the man who shot my paw." That was why I was limping. God, this is a rough audience. Jeez. What the hell was I? Okay, now, where would the gunfight have occurred? What town would it have been in the Old West? I give up. It would have been in Tombstone. I'm not even going to try to help. Okay, straight up. You need to know the regulations. Reg D, Reg A, the form that is filled out for the full-blown, high-powered offering is a Form S-1. Make sure you understand that. What is the law that oversees primary sales of stock? In other words, companies selling stock to the public. That's the Securities Act of 1933 as amended. The law that came the next year that oversees the secondary markets where stock is bought and traded among investors, that is the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 as amended. Those are the two giant laws that govern the securities markets and everything that happens therein. Now, there are state laws too, but these are the 800-pound gorillas. Now, a company can go public by filing a form, like Form S-1, an SB-1, and SB-2. But if a company already has private stock and it wants to register that stock with the Securities and Exchange Commission, there's another thing that it does. That's called, what form would they file to start being a public company and to register stock that already existed out there as private stock? Do you remember that one? That's Form 10. Form 10. And then, no matter which way you go public, every quarter you have to file Form 10-Q. Every year you file Form 10-K. Hence why I showed you those and the system, Edgar system at the SEC, where you can get all this information from those forms. Make sure you know the regulatory environment and the legal environment of the securities markets. And I'm really not all that interested in having you worry about, the book goes on about the Sarbanes-Oxley SOX and the law that came in, what was it, 2009. We call those laws the Lawyer and Accountant Employment Assurance Acts, because they really didn't reform the markets at all. Finance is still the most corrupt of all of the business fields, according to Forbes and according to other high-powered conservative weekly news sources. But these are the ethical things, and I don't really worry too much about those. Okay, now, ratio analysis. I will probe you. I don't really, you've done that on the online stuff. I don't really want you to show me that you've got your mojo, you know every ratio, you can write them down. You're allowed two cards for the exam, okay? Two, not one, because it's a double exam. You're covering twice as much material. But here's the deal. You have to understand, be able to tell me, what does this ratio mean? Explain to me why it would be good for it to be high, or it might be bad for it to be high. And I could hit you with almost anything. I won't go into the totally exotic ones. But I could say, okay, a company has a gross margin that has been going down over the past 5 years. Explain, give one explanation as to why this would be happening. That means you have to understand the formula. That's why you would probably want to have it on a card and think about it. But can you tell me why gross margin might be going down? And you don't have to have there's not only one, but there are several. And there are maybe three or four that might be good explanations, and there are an infinite number that would be ass. So you've got to give me one that's one of the good ones. Why might gross margin be going down over a period of time? Got any idea? Now remember, gross margin is your gross income divided by your sales. In other words, sales minus cost of goods sold is gross income. So your gross income as a percent of sales is going down over the past 5 years. What does that mean? What could that mean? Yeah.
You could have a high fixed cost.
Not high. No, it wouldn't be fixed cost because there's no fixed cost going on. From the revenue to the gross margin is all variable cost. Yeah, go ahead. You had one?
Yeah, I was going to say variable cost.
Use more common language. What is cost of goods sold? That's your wholesale price you're paying. So if your gross margin, your sales minus your wholesale over your sales is going down, that means that your wholesale prices are probably going up over time, or at least your sales aren't going up as fast. So that's a bad sign. That would tell me unless what might be a positive reason. I mean, it's obvious that wholesale, what they're paying at wholesale is going up against what they're charging at retail. Now, obviously, they're unable to completely reflect their wholesale prices in their retail prices. So that's an issue right there. But there might be a good reason for that. What if the company is just trying to improve its product? The quality. It's trying to get out of the mode of being the cheapo special. It's going to try to raise its prices, but remember from economics, you can't just jack up your prices. You have to know how that's going to affect your consumers. So maybe this company is willing to sacrifice some of its gross profit just to get its reputation out of the dirt for having crappy stuff. Literally, years and years ago, anything that was a Japanese electronic was considered cheap crap. And then there were some companies that began to fight their way out of that, that began to deliberately spend more money on good components that were demonstrably, and they became highly respected for that. Among them, do you know any companies that became highly respected for their audio stuff? You know some, I'm sure. How about Sony, Aiwa? All these companies used to have cheap crap. They started spending more to create higher quality. So they sacrificed gross margin, but it was to the purpose of a long-term strategy. And now they are highly respected. Okay, so those are the kinds of things. I want you to think and show me that you can do that kind of critical thinking, because that's at the end of the course. That's what this is all about. Is show me that you can think your way through a ratio, a trend in a ratio, and know what, and give a good explanation for what you are seeing. Also, make sure that you understand the government's effects on interest rates. Understand interest rates. Make sure you know what the Fed does, what it can do, what it does do. What are its three duties? What are the three tools of monetary policy? How does it execute open market operations? What are the components of an interest rate? What is the risk premium? What's inside of the risk-free rate? I will find a way to ask you about that. I might even try again to have you look at a yield curve and talk to me about a yield curve, or at least explain what a yield curve tells us, because that's something that a knowledgeable person who is a professional might want to look at every now and then, is see, have a look at a yield curve and what its effect is. Okay? Make sure you understand the capital asset pricing model. That does not mean I want you to write down the equation and an answer. I'm going to put that rubric back up online on my podcasting website. I don't want to see an equation. I want to see an explanation of how it would be used and what effect different and different parameters changing would have on that. So be sure you know how we would use the capital asset pricing model. Don't show me the equation and say, I'm a good boy, I can remember things like an accountant. Show me that you understand it. And also make sure you know what money is and what the different kinds of money are. That's important for you because you're going to live in a world where the concept of money is going to be very different from what it was in my time, in my childhood. And unfortunately, our government is trying to grab control and regulate an animal that it doesn't even grasp all that well. What is money? What are the types of money? What are the three monetary aggregates? That's a different question. If I ask you, what are the monetary aggregates? Explain what was happening to those three monetary aggregates in the period from 2004 to 2008. You should be able to answer that question because that was at the heart of the crash and the near apocalypse we had in September of 2008. So in other words, you darn well better know not just M1, M2, and M3, but you also should know what was going on with those. And I'll tell you something, a secret right now. Notwithstanding the efforts of the Federal Reserve to make it look like things are good, it is the way, if you get rid of all the crap, M1 is behaving just like it did, like we were in 2006 again. It's your turn. Ask me some questions. I'm getting tired. I haven't covered everything, but then again, it's a final exam. What do you want to ask me? Got anything? Your exam, by the way, yours is on Tuesday at 10, or is it Wednesday? I know one of my classes at 10 on Wednesday, one's at 10. Now, there's something that I have to have you do here. By the way, I will be in my office on Monday from noon until 2, special office hours, noon until 2. So if you have any last-minute questions or want to make any last-minute death threats to me, by all means, that is all I have for you for this semester. I thank you for being my students.